Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Washington podcast with your hosts, Vincent Cavallari and Tyson Pino.
Sink these shoes, quit clacking down some dead end street. Take these shoes.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Mill Creek View podcast. I'm your host, Mill Creek City Councilman Vincent Cavallari. My co-host and sidekick, Tyson Pinio, will not be here today. He has family matters to attend to, and we will certainly respect that. But we will endeavor to make this a valuable use of your time, so sit back, enjoy, check us out, visit millcreekviewonline.com. Subscribe, like us, comment, whatever you choose, we would love to hear from you. As we've done the past couple of weeks, we are going to stick with the law and justice narrative for this show. So we want you to sit back and enjoy, and we're going to bring you another great guest coming up here shortly. Our guest is in studio, Mike Solem from Seattle Police Department. He is the Seattle Guild president. We are excited to have him here. We'll get an inside look and see what happened to the defunding nonsense a couple of years later. And as a side note, Mike has been on the front line since day one of the Summer of Love and the hostile takeover of several Capitol Hill blocks. We're going to get into all that, how it's affected operations, public safety, and that's going to actually dovetail into my opening monologue. Friends, if you had told me that rioters and looters would have carte blanche to terrorize the citizens for the better part of a year in Seattle, I would have called you a liar. If you had told me that violent and angry mobs would take over several city blocks within the city of Seattle, I wouldn't have believed you. If you had told me that the city of Seattle would surrender an entire police precinct to the woke mob, I would have said no way that that happened. If you had told me that 30% and climbing of all small businesses would close because of mandates and skyrocketing crime, I would have again called you a liar. And finally, if you had told me that the city would terminate its police officers for refusing to put an experimental vaccine in their bodies, I would have said no way. There's no way that could happen. But the history books would eventually prove me wrong. Friends, the progressive left doesn't do anything without an endgame. What's happening isn't a series of unintended consequences due to bad decisions, bad policy, or bad leaders. You need to start asking the right questions and be willing to hear the right answers. What did they think would happen when they defunded the police and shrunk the ranks in Seattle by hundreds of officers? What did they think would happen when they allowed the woke mob to wreak havoc on the streets without consequences? What did they think would happen when they continued to let the bad guys out of jail to reoffend? What did they think would happen when they decriminalized narcotics? What did they think would happen when they turned a blind eye to property crimes? Friends, these are just a few of the highlights, and we'll get into the economic implications a bit later, but we're going to stay with public safety. Fact of the matter is this. All of this did happen and continues to happen to this day, and it is 100% intentional and 100% self-inflicted. This is the result of the progressive left's societal and restorative justice movements. This is what they want. Demonize the cops, victimize the bad guys, effectively turning civility in your community on its head. And friends, this is playing out in every Democrat-led city in the nation. Seattle, San Francisco, L.A., Chicago, Philly. Take your pick. It reads like some cultish woke manifesto. And trust me when I say this, the crime data supports my assertions, and I'm happy to have this debate with anyone on the matter. I challenge you to go down the streets at night. Go down to 2nd and Pine, 1st and Pike, and tell me how safe you really feel. As a matter of fact, I just read about another tourist that was robbed outside his hotel the other day, and his quote was, "I didn't think this was this bad." He can thank the mainstream media for suppressing his narrative. They have a vital role to play here, too. Before we bring on our guest, we are going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
It don't matter just one bit how much money's in the bank. It's all about the time we spend and those we have to thank. Thank all those good guys and gals for being such good friends. Baby, that's what it's all about till the bitter end.
If you like what you're hearing here, you're going to love the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast, found at all your favorite podcast outlets.
It's only money, not worth the paper it's printed on. It has no warmth when you hold it in your hands.
Welcome back. Friends, you know the only way we grow the audience here is by you sharing it with friends of yours. That's all we're asking. Share it with 10 friends, and I promise you won't be disappointed. We're back with our guest. Our guest is in studio tonight. We're excited to have him. Our guest has worked at the Seattle Police Department for the last 24 years. He's worked patrol. He's worked the gang unit. He's worked SWAT. He's been a detective. He is currently the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild. He's the president of the United Coalition for Public Safety. He also hosts the podcast, Hold the Line podcast, with Officer Mike Solon. Welcome in studio here today, Mike Solon.
Vinny, pleasure to be here, man. I like the fact that you've got a podcast going on. You're trying to reach more people. And I think the biggest thing is that what I recognize is not only the good intro you had highlighting all the shenanigans that were obviously we felt in 2020 that we continue to feel post-2020, but I think the big thing is you got to get the information out there. And the more platforms we have that give the truth and the reality to our constituents when we talk about public safety, I think it really creates a connection with the community outside of what the media does not report.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And just to give some context for the history of Mike and I, we both met in the beginning of the throes of the Defund the Police movement and the George Floyd riots, to give it a name. We both back then coordinated and attended Back the Blue events in Seattle, in King County and Snohomish County, really, bringing our message to the street so those law-abiding citizens had a voice. We have a lot of questions for you. Are you ready?
I'm ready for any question you want to throw at me.
All right.
It's nothing I haven't had asked towards me or possibly thrown at me or threatened at me. So, hey, take your best shot, Vin. I'm ready to take it on.
All right. And this is really the best vessel of communication to get out there and just get out there and tell the truth.
That's it.
So, like I said, we have a lot of questions. And you heard my monologue. How is the morale at the Seattle PD?
You know, I was at an event last night that Jason Rantz put on in Renton. It was their Freedom event via KTTH. And there was some guest speakers there. You know, the sheriff from Pierce County, Troyer, was there, Chief Adrian Diaz. Brandy Cruz is one of the moderators, the deputy mayor of Bellevue. And Brandy asked me that question, what's the morale like right now? And I had to pause there because I get that question asked a lot, but each time it makes me, just like right now, I get a little bit of goosebumps because it's the absolute worst I've ever seen. And for me, that it takes me to a place of emotion because what it does is it makes you really question and evaluate your entire career as to why you became a cop in the first place. Because now you know that you're almost helpless to really fulfill that calling or that drive to quench that thirst of why you wanted to become a cop in the first place. Because now, given the policies that our politicians and the activists have plagued us with, and I think that's an appropriate word, our ability to do our jobs is deeply impacted. So it's not great, man. That's a long answer to your question, but this is the worst I've ever seen.
It's really true. They have, I guess I would call it, set a lot of landmines for this career path. Even for those new wanting to get in, we're having a tough time bringing officers to the ranks, laterals. And as a city legislator, I was happy to receive some of the laterals that were mandated out of Seattle. And it is a tough pill to swallow when you dedicate yourself, your life, your family, because you don't just dedicate yourself when you do police work. You dedicate your family, those around you, and everything on it. It's why policing is number one in divorce, number one in alcoholism. There's just a lot of baggage that goes with the career, and the last thing you want is the folks that support you is to be in your enemy camp, and that's what's happening here today, and it's unfortunate. And just to give it some perspective, how many officers is Seattle down currently?
Well, we're close to 600 people. So of an agency that should be around 1,400, but I think that's 1970 levels, 1,400. And when you compare it to our sister city, which is Boston, they have about 2,200 cops, but they have less of a population. So they must have double the size of our agency. But In 2018, we started to see the exodus occur at the Seattle Police Department due to the hyper-focused, unreasonable politics impacting the policing profession in Seattle. And we started to see the exodus occur there. But obviously 2020 was the true cause of this mass exodus, where we've lost close to 600 cops in 3 years. So right now, out of an agency that should be around 1,400, that are budgeted for 1,400, we have 895 deployable sworn police officers in the city of Seattle.
Wow.
It's almost half your agency gone in 3 years. And how do you recover from that? I don't know if you can.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And again, to hear the numbers live, I mean, the media won't put it out there. That's why these operations that we have here are so important. The media won't put it out there. People aren't going to hear. Are we even responding to 911 calls in a timely manner?
Well, to that point, you know, there was a Como piece that came out 2 days ago. Chris Daniels, formerly King 5, then went to Como. And I got a lot of respect for Chris, and he and I have done a lot of interviews. He's a professional. And they put a piece together, he did, 2 days ago, that quoted Chief Diaz talking with the city council about the public safety situation, particularly the recruiting and retention efforts and whatnot. And the way the chief spoke of the numbers was a bit different than how you and I are talking about the numbers. And for some reason, they're couching those numbers for political reasons. And they mentioned that we're 300 people down at 2020 staffing levels. And that's not really being accurate, is it?
No.
So we have to fast forward to 2023 with the real numbers, and that's why I say that we are close to 600 people gone. And that's a stunning number. And I think one of the reasons why we've lost so many people is, obviously, you've already touched on it, the hyper-focused politicalization of policing in the city of Seattle by our elected officials, which is unfortunate and completely self-inflicted. But the main drive is, number one, we don't have political public support from our elected officials. And at a human level, if you're an employee anywhere, even if it's policing or outside of policing, you're going to want to hear that you're valued, just on a human level. And the second part that I think was as equally important to that, and I talked about this with Ari Hoffman yesterday on his show, is that our union, the Seattle Police Officers Guild, and the city of Seattle, we are still working under an expired labor contract, now going on 2.5 years. And so you talk about cost of living, and we all know that inflation is through the roof, and we're all feeling the pinch in the wallet when we fill up our gas, we go buy food and groceries, we pay our bills. It's real. And where Seattle is a very difficult place to work politically, and it's high crime, the bottom line is we're no longer the highest paid in the state, and we've got other agencies. I think we rank among 10th in the state right now for lower wages. So you combine all those issues, and I think it creates this atmosphere where the mass exodus continues, and it's a serious red alert issue impacting everybody in this region, not just Seattle, because what happens in Seattle, as you know, Vinny, impacts the entire state.
It's almost like I liken it on the campaign trail last year to playing whack-a-mole, where we never get ahead of the curve. We're constantly looking to play whack-a-mole to knock the next, you know, bad issue out of the park. And so think about this for a second. How do we expect to retain or even recruit cops if we're not paying market wage? Because there is such an advanced competition for the lateral officer, for the new recruit. And let's face it, young boys and girls are not signing up at the number they did in prior years to be police officers. So there's this vacuum that's being created, and the bad guys are filling it at this time. And so I question the legislature, even the state legislator. We've had these folks in council session here recently, and they're just abhorrent people. They're clueless. They know nothing about it. They know sound bites. They know talking points. And explain to them and to the audience, what's the crime situation like in Seattle?
Well, I think it's self-evident. You just look around and you see how fentanyl has just besieged our city streets. And it's causing businesses to board their windows and leave the city. I think people are just tired of the crime and the blight. And when you're a cop, getting back to basics, when you're handcuffed, no pun intended, from being able to enforce the law, because now the law is very, what would you call it?
Ambiguous.
Unenforceable. How about that? You know, you're left to have some serious concerns about, you know, your future in your employment. And, we talk about recruiting and the numbers and staffing. I think there's a few issues. You know, when you don't have a proper wage to do the job, nobody does a job for free, although we know that policing is a calling, right? But at some point, you're going to have to put food on the table, and you're going to have to pay for things for your family so you can live. This job isn't free. And I think for too long, our goodwill has been taken advantage of. And now I think that's coming back to really show itself. And I'm worried, deeply worried, that we're not recruiting the proper humans to want to do this job, because just in desperation, you could probably see people, employers, bring in the wrong candidate to be a police officer. And then we're really playing into the hands of the activist groups that say all cops are beat the B word. I don't want to swear on your podcast here. But that's the concern for me. And I think we saw that play out in Memphis a few months ago, right, where some of those officers didn't have a proper background check, and then look at the actions. So, and then the other piece of this is, with this mass exodus and our desperation, if you will, to use that word twice in a minute, we're having a vacuum of knowledge leave this profession. And what do I mean by that? I'm meaning people that have had real job experience with investigations and dealing with criminals that prey on victims that are leaving this profession. And there's a vacuum here of knowledge that I don't think the public realizes how desperate we are. Three times now. Don't judge me on that, but of the fact that we're in serious trouble. And that's not hyperbole, that's reality. And I live in a world in reality, and I just, platforms like this, you know, I think you got to get the message out there, because to your point earlier in the question, media is not doing it. Not to the degree that they can or should. And we got to get that word out there, because, not to hog all the air in this room and this microphone, but, you know, we did a poll, I would say the second week of May, to about 400 people in the city of Seattle, asking them certain questions on staffing, and much led to the conversation you and I are having. And we had some pretty good responses, and, you know, five being the highest level of people showing what is a priority to them, one being the least priority. The number one topic was people are concerned about homelessness. The second was the drug epidemic, fentanyl. Third was crime. Fourth was mental illness. And I think the fifth was camping in parks and whatnot. To me, that shows you that, you know, we've got a lot of issues here that, you know,
there's a disconnect.
That society is being tested, and there's a major disconnect, and I think we got to get that more of the message out there.
To your point about standards, it's obvious, and again, not to talk about other hats that I wear, but I have seen the standards get lowered officially and unofficially. They just simply have to put bodies out there. That's what it's coming to at this point. So I don't want to beleaguer that too much, and I don't want to minimize how important it is either, because folks, you're the ones calling 911 and expecting a response. And,
well,
and
they're expecting a professional response.
A professional response. Thanks for the correction. And at some point, it is going to hit a breaking point. It is calls are not going to go answered, and you're going to see this backlash against the police again. And it's this lose-lose position that many of the cops are in, especially in Seattle, in Democrat-led cities. And I don't give these folks a break. I think the progressives are poison. I think what they're doing in Democrat-led cities is not only evidentiary-based, but it's proven at this point that it's destructive, I think, to use your word a second ago.
Well, you can almost speculate that it's intentional. And that's unfortunate to say that. But, you know, you look at that. This isn't just localized to our region. This is a nationwide issue that, even if it wasn't the tragic incident with George Floyd, the murder there, if that didn't exist, it would be some other form of video that's shocking optically to the eye.
Sure, whether it's a guy defending himself in the subway.
It's whatever. And to further the narrative, mostly the false narratives, to further some sort of political edge and agenda, and cops are used to fulfill that mission. And, you know, if you can remove police officers from the community trust, that's one major step to the goal of where you want to be. And, you know, the problem that I have is being the union head in the city of Seattle is I have to work with our elected officials. Why? Because I need to procure a labor contract for our people. And we're 2.5 years without a labor contract. That means people don't have the proper wages to fulfill today's hyper inflation standards. We've already talked about
it. Since the recession began, really.
Yeah. And then if you tie that back to fulfilling police jobs, I mean, I think we all know, we've been around the block for a bit. Once the economy really tanks and we're in a significant recession, then people flock to public sector jobs. And as I yearn to get a contract from for our people, but I also realize that our other ally, but not an ally, is the economy turning in a bad way, then we'll see people come to our profession. But at the same time, I'm trying to get paid. I'm trying to get our people paid. And that's the mission. So I have to walk hand in hand with our elected officials to a degree that have caused this situation, trying to balance that line, but also hold them to account publicly and making sure that they don't continue to besmirch and malign the good men and women that do the job of policing.
Let's stay with that. How is the relationship with the bargaining unit and Seattle City Council and the mayor's office?
Well, you know, I think with the mayor's office, it's good. The executive. I am in contact with the executive and the staff there. I think the disconnect, though, and I don't want to speak for them, but just my observations, is the disconnect is with the executive and the city council. I mean, I have a few decent relationships with the current city council, but as we know, five of them are not running for re-election. So 5 out of 9, we have an opportunity here to change the scope of Seattle City Council politics for a brighter future right now. But, you know, there are some people that have put their hat in the ring that I'm deeply concerned about, because we don't want to replace someone that's unreasonable with
just
another
like
unreasonable
Chicago.
Person.
Chicago's Brandon Johnson.
And then we're back in the same spot.
It's a vicious cycle, right? I mean, for the life of me, I could, and I just did an article in the current Mill Creek View newspaper, folks, if you want to check that out, where I talk about exactly that, where I didn't think it would be possible to hire some leader more abhorrent than Lori Lightfoot. And fact of the matter is they did in Chicago. Someone more radical who ran on defunding the police.
You got to look at why is that occurring?
Yeah, what is the root?
Where is the disconnect? Perhaps, and this is why we're talking about alternative forms of media, how they're growing in size and popularity. Maybe this is the remedy for our lack of getting a narrative out there. And when we rely on traditional media to do that, and they do not do that, and then we're frustrated with it, then we see the results. Are the results showed in our polling we just did is that the public is vastly uninformed about what we do.
Yep.
And the only litmus test that they use is when a body cam video footage is released and a 5-second clip is then judged and analyzed by people that have no idea the context of that contact and the tactics used by officers.
Yep.
But we know that negativity, bad news, sells. And that's what people unfortunately consume, because it draws your attention. We like the human drama. And nobody's really interested in a positive story, right? Not to the level that most people are drawn to a negative story. And so how do you combat that? So clearly, our police departments aren't going to be putting a narrative out there that wades into the politics and really tells the true story, right? They have to play the middle ground. And a very vanilla middle ground that it is. That's why I think unions, particularly what we started here at the Seattle Police Officers Guild, we've immersed ourselves in a media narrative to try to combat that void in information. And our poll is suggestive that we're making some headway on that, but it's an uphill battle. And the resources are difficult because we don't have the multi-millions of dollars to have a media empire to put forth a message where we explain our actions, break down a video, and then put that information out there for people to consume. You know, we live in a real instant gratification society. So how do you do that? So we've developed some forms of media outreach. We're happy about it. I think the podcast that we've done at SPOG is good. And ours are all national group, United Coalition of Public Safety, where we've got major police unions across the nation that belong. You know, we're filling that void right now as well. So, we've got an uphill battle, but it's not insurmountable. We can do this.
You know, we've come a long ways from TV shows like One Adam 12 that really put a positive light, Chips, and these kind of things where you made that human drama, drew people in, and that was when media was very much behind the police departments. And overall, it's a real shift now. The tendency is individuals with multiple problems and conflicts and stuff. How do you go about recruiting new young men and women in high school, junior colleges, this type of thing? A friend of my son went out of the trades, and he became he's a policeman now, probably a young guy out there in the SP, you know, police department in Seattle. How do you go about bringing in, because this is what you guys are both asking, how do you go about bringing them in? You said there's a budget for them. Have you been working on that, recruiting?
Well, it's not the union's job to recruit people. It's the police department's job. It's the city of Seattle's job to do that. And so I think that Como piece, and we can maybe you guys could put a link in your website to this context, and I could send it to you.
Yeah.
You know, that's the typical job of the agency and the city to hire their employees. How do they do that? Well, I can tell you that they've budgeted for a lot of money for getting people in, but they've hardly even spent a dime for it, just a little bit. So they're asking some hard questions at the council to say, hey, why isn't this money being used, and help us explain why we have such meager results with recruiting. Well, I can tell you right now to answer that question is, number one, you got to spend money, and you have to provide a welcoming environment where police officers are absolutely protected and they're supported. And how do you do that? Public support, and then you pay them. Clearly, we're 0 for 2 for that right now. So you're not going to get anybody. Yeah. Now we're close to 600 people and counting, and our numbers are projecting losses of another 100 officers this year alone.
Is that retiring out?
Retiring out or quitting?
Yeah, quitting.
And we talked about that a little bit before of how, you know, they've gone now 2.5 years without a contract, so they're not even paying fair market wage. They're not even competing with the cities like Everett, cities like I think Mill Creek. I think we recognized this about 3 years ago when this kicked off. Really, that you're going to have to be proactive. Officers just do not want to respond to 911 calls all day. They want to be part of the community. They want to community police. So, I mean, we're all asking that question, but when the governing agency puts up the wall between you and the people, it's a rock and a hard place. And again, like Mike said, is that that's why we're having these conversations. And now we see like the George Soros prosecutors across this country. Bail reform. How is that affecting operations?
Or just look on the street. I mean, we can barely book anybody into King County Jail on a misdemeanor charge outside of a domestic violence charge. You know, but to the point of recruiting and retention and cost, you know, we use the Bellevue-Tacoma Index in terms of measuring the cost of living. And that number will be made public in July, but, they take the data in June. And they believe it's 6.5, you know, up. And if you fast forward to January of 24, Seattle Police Department, SPOG, we're going to be at 23.3% below COLA.
Oh.
Yeah, and that 6.5 he just mentioned is just for the year.
Yeah, absolutely. So you combine us being out of a labor contract for 2.5 years plus 6.5 for this year, and then you fast forward to January of 24, we're 23.3% behind.
Hasn't that been a challenge? I've heard that within the police departments, especially Seattle, the police have to... The cops have to live in Snohomish County or outways. They can't even live in the communities they police because the cost of living down there is so much higher than their wages. So they're coming in from outside. Is that still the case?
Well, yeah. I mean, you're budgeted out from having a home that's closer to your employer in King County for sure. You know, just to give you a bit of a window, what I deal with on a daily basis, in particular special operations. We're talking SWAT, K-9, arson bomb squad, harbor patrol, things that you aspire to when you're a young officer that you want to, you know, fulfill your career and maybe try to get to, right? Those are coveted positions. You know, for the life of me, particularly under this staffing crisis, the powers that be have implemented a policy for special operations that you cannot live outside of 35 miles from the city of Seattle. So as you're a young officer, how in the hell are you going to be able to get into special operations because you can't afford anything 35 miles and in?
Means your only option is an apartment in Rainier Valley.
Exactly. Well, and it's not the city limits right now. They pick HQ as the dot for the mile counter. So we're even closer than you realize. So it's decisions like that. And I understand operationally. You're going to want people to be able to respond to a rapidly evolving situation in a quick manner. The problem is not everybody in special operations gets take-home cars. And so you're going to use your personal vehicle to drive at a higher rate of speed, which you're liable for, and your insurance is liable for, to get to the city to put on your city gear, and then get your city vehicle, and then respond. I mean, it's there's decisions that are being made to me that are just, quite frankly, asinine. And we're trying to bargain them and to try to basically give the command, and I'm not trying to bury the command here because I have to work with them, and there's some good people, but there's some decisions that are being made that don't really, I think, sit in the pot of common sense.
So you mentioned the mayor before, and I don't want to paint you into a corner here, but how's the new mayor? Has anything changed for the better?
I think Mayor Harrell's doing a good job, as good of a job as he can, without a good relationship with council. How about that? I think he's in a tough position politically to at least illustrate to the constituents that things are changing. Because we all know that whomever occupies the executive position in any city, they live or die by public safety.
Yeah.
Right? That's the biggest thing that government is in charge of. I think the clearing of out-of-control encampments, he's doing that, but it's just clearing. What do I mean by that? Is you might have a camp in Soto, right near the stadium, that's optically not a good look, because you've got people from the east side, south, and north coming in to maybe watch the Mariners game, and it's the blight that really shows how Seattle is viewed. You know, they're being cleared up because we've got MLB All-Star coming, and that's the politics of it. You got to clear it up because the nation's coming, but the problem is you clear it up, but then they move them two blocks away.
Kind of
so
like,
it's this
like
constant chase.
Up El Paso, so yeah. The president can visit.
It's the constant chase of
China and the Olympics.
Yeah, you just move people around.
Yeah.
So I hope I answered that question.
I gave
you a bit of a political answer because I have to work with the executive. But he's in a tough spot. I think he's doing as good a job as he could do, outside of what's happening at the council.
Well, I guess that is at least some sort of forward momentum that we can take from this conversation.
Yeah.
And he's trying, and he's new to politics. So my hope is that being new to politics and being ambitious don't collide.
Yeah, he's new as the mayor for sure, but he's been involved in the council for years. He's been in the city for a very long time, graduate of UW, played football there. But he's new as the executive. And I think he's being tested, and you live and die by public safety. And if there's anything take away, if they listen to this, you've got to take care of your cops, and you got to pay them. And it's not the union's job to sell the contract to the council. It's the executive's job. So if there's any kind of feedback I would give to me more direct with your question, I think they could do a bit more.
And I don't want this to be painted as some sort of union money grab, because it's
absolutely
not.
No, because I'm going to interrupt you real quick.
Good.
Because the first thing I said was, what was the first thing I said that's number one problem? I said it's lack of public support for our elected officials.
Yes.
That's number one.
Yep.
And we all want a good wage, right? But number one, you want to be respected.
Yep.
And obviously, two, you don't do anything for free, particularly when it comes to policing in Seattle. So,
particularly when it costs more now.
Yeah, correct. And those two go hand in hand. But interesting in our poll is that most of the people, there's about 170 people out of the people that we polled, they did not know that we were operating under an expired labor contract. That to me is, maybe it's a bad messaging on our part. We're not getting the information out there, and we can improve that. But the other point was they supported a cost of living increase for the cops, so the cops stick around, because they realize we can't lose any more. So at least the constituents get it.
Mm.
But then how is that registered to the people that actually get elected by them? Right now, kind of stuck in quicksand.
Do you hold out hope for this city, or do you think it's gone off the cliff?
No, I'm an optimist, man. I have to be in this role. There's always hope. And it takes courage to change the course of action. And you're going to need to be to have people in positions that are courageous to make difficult decisions, to change the course of action. Admit, hey, maybe this call wasn't great, and we need to pivot. We need to pivot fast. Because I tell you, special events, as we all know, special events is like the Seahawks, Mariners,
yep.
You know, Climate Pledge Arena, all the concerts, the Kraken. The demand on officers to staff those events is astronomical.
Wow.
And that right now is one of my biggest challenges, is trying to come up with a deal. You know, we're kind of getting in the weeds here, but maybe your members, your listeners will like some bit of insight here.
Absolutely.
You know, we've lost 600 people, close to 600 people. Our current collective bargaining agreement language has, when you need to staff an event, say let's like it's the Seahawks, okay? In order to get cops there, you've got two issues. You've got to staff the inside of the stadium, and then you have to staff the outside of the stadium. You have to get people in and out in a timely manner, or they're going to be pissed, right? You want to go and have a good time, watch the game, then you want to get the hell out of there, and you don't want to just sit in traffic, right? So you need quality cops to get traffic in and out. Okay, so our current CBA called for volunteers first, and then if you don't have enough volunteers to staff that event, then you draft. And when we were fat, using that tongue-in-cheek, meaning 1,400 cops, the language was good because you had enough volunteers. People were fighting for the overtime, right?
Mm.
Very rare did you have to draft.
And you were senior enough where you didn't even have to worry about
exactly.
it. Exactly. So, yeah.
The problem is that when you drafted, that the impact was then felt by the Investigation Bureau, which means detectives. So detectives would typically get drafted. And then if you didn't have enough from that draft, then you would tap into patrol, right? Patrol was the last thing you would tap into because you need them for 911 response.
Yep.
Fast forward to today. Special events, if we just didn't do this deal we did, which wasn't great, outside of our current CBA, if we didn't do this deal, which means we made it more fair and equitable to have the herd, if you will, of a draft to fill a special event, the Investigations Bureau at a minimum would have had to have worked 16 to 20 special events, and then there goes your whole summer. You're just at work. You're not enjoying your time, the beautiful weather. That was just if we just held on to that current CBA language. Then we had to pivot, and then we had to come up with a deal which made it more equitable. It's not a great system because we have to solve it at the contract table. And it's currently, like I mentioned, still negotiating. Now they're burdened with working 9 special events, and patrol has to work 2.
So we're getting burned on both ends now. Now the younger guys that just graduate the academy and get their wings and start flying out there, they're saying, hey, wait a minute, I can go to the city of Everett with a $25,000 sign-on bonus, and the cost of living is cheaper. It's a no-brainer at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can go out of state. I can go wherever I want. So couple that with attrition, you know, and like I said, we're getting burned on both ends. So it's just simply not sustainable. And so who's to blame for this? Let's point the finger where it belongs.
Well, I think we touched on it, and I went hard in the paint against the city council in 2020. I mean, I had a hard 3 years where I went after them really hard. But lately, since it's now negotiation time and I have to get a deal, I've pivoted to a degree, right? I'm not as out there. I mean, I don't know how many Fox News hits I was doing. I was all over the place. You know, it's challenging, but you have to wear a bit of a different hat now where you're in negotiations, and you have to, like I mentioned earlier, you have to walk with them, although they were the cause of this, you have to walk with them and try to get a deal done. And it's a very difficult place to be.
Well, I've got a question. I have a friend of mine who worked, my neighbor, they have their corporation down in Renton. Big yard, all their equipment, and the homeless, the thieves, jump over the fence, steal stuff. It's all over the area. They call up the police. The police can't come and do anything, or they're told they can't do anything. So now they've got the barbed wire. They've got the razor wire up above. They've had to put double security, double, you name it. They've had to do all these improvements. Seems to me that that can be multiplied by every major company that has a yard with vehicles, with materials. How difficult then is it, because you're so limited, and that's renting, but you can't just go out and do anything about this. I mean, are you hamstrung on that?
Well, it comes down to the voter. It really does.
Yep.
And we have the opportunity, we meaning our communities, have the opportunity to elect people to change the course of action. But typically in the city of Seattle, 25% of the population votes. Think about that. And, you know, we talk about a information disconnect, and if they're uninformed, but then they see a viral video and a 5-second clip of something, they automatically have an understanding that the police are the problem because it's spun that way. And that's, quite frankly, as we all know, that's completely false.
So maybe the corporations themselves that have these businesses should be on top of their people saying we need pushing for legislators.
It's going to take community effort.
It will.
Like you mentioned, you know, Vinny, in your opening remarks, if you're listening to this, get 10 people to share it.
Yep.
Well, how about we take that same motto to, if you're going to go vote, take 5-10 people with you and go vote, or fill out your ballot at the same time. Right? That's how the community gets involved. Because if you just sit on your hands, nothing's going to change. And I don't think, I'm trying to be an optimist here, but I have to get a little bit negative. I don't think that we've hit rock bottom here.
Same.
And until we hit rock bottom, what does that mean? It means it has to impact the majority of people's doorsteps for them to really care and say, wait a minute.
Absolutely.
We got a problem.
Yeah,
Right now, we're sounding the alarm, but we're on a death spiral here. And if, you know, perhaps we need to hit bottom, fellas.
We don't have too much time left. There's a couple of questions I did want to get out there. Are we as public servants, are we allowing our citizens pursuing life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? I mean, how safe do these people feel in the city? Can you imagine? I couldn't imagine being a resident during the takeover of Capitol Hill. I couldn't imagine surrendering a police precinct. It's just insane to me. So I don't even know what the question is, really.
I think you're just talking openly about the reality of people not really understanding the reality. does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's almost like people are living in a twilight zone.
Well, and that gets to my point earlier. It hasn't impacted their personal doorsteps.
That's right.
And it's almost like, and I don't want to talk ill, but I think people need to be called out. It's a selfish way of looking at things. Remember, it's an instant gratification.
Yep.
What about me?
Yep.
I just want to watch what's on Netflix. Right?
It's true.
And until your door's kicked in and you don't have a plan to react to that, and you think that 911 can be called and there's going to be this savior, well, guess what? Your inaction has called for nobody to respond. And so at some point, you know, we're held to an accountability standard, as we should. I'm not a police apologist, not by a long shot. Yeah, I'm the union head, and I try to stand up for officers and represent them in discipline matters, for sure. But we're reasonable about it, right? And so, yeah, we hold ourselves accountable because we're professionals. But at some point, in a service to our communities, we have to look and say, listen, we need your help here. You can't just rely on a person with a badge and a gun to solve all of your problems.
No.
You have to get in the paint with us.
That's a great comment.
We're being boxed out.
A lose-lose situation.
Lose-lose. Right?
Enforce the law, the state will come after you. You know, enforce the law, the bad guys will sue you.
So I put it on them. Like, I do some augmenting shifts here and there. And when I ask people who are, to your point, Steve, about, what are we to do? I ask those people, what are you doing?
Are you voting for new council members? Are you out there at your local corner place making a difference?
How are you helping us to help yourself?
Exactly.
You got to put it on them. And that might be an arrogant takeaway from this, but at some point, the cops can't take all of your problems. Clearly, what's happening is that cops, we're breaking, or we've already broken. And the system is collapsing.
I think you're going to love when I get to the closing monologue, because we didn't set this up ahead of time. I touch on exactly that, but the voter. One last, how much time we got, Steve?
Oh, we got about 4 minutes on this segment.
Okay, all right. Would you tell your friends and family to come visit Seattle?
Man, you really put me on the spot.
It's, you know what, though? I mean, we have to, we talked about hard truths. Right, I talked in my opening
right
monologue.
Now I would not.
It's very difficult, right?
You know, it's such a remarkably beautiful city.
It is. It is.
It is stunning. I think it has the best weather in the nation.
That's why we have all the homeless. I mean, that's why
they're
one of
the reasons.
I know. I'm just being facetious.
It's a fantastic place to live. But it's being intentionally ruined.
Yes. Yep.
And I can't wrap my head around why that is. It goes against any ounce of common sense that I have in my body.
I mean, I have some theories, and I write about them a lot. It's that struggle for power. It's the desire for more. It's why they create these entities within politics, these organizations, these agencies. It's why when someone is elected to position that's going to win a position anyway, they step down immediately, appoint someone else in there as they continue to pad the stats or fill the void with the wrong types of people. And when you have the inept leading, you get inept leadership. I mean, the math is really simple.
So then it circles back to the voter.
Mm.
Wake up.
Yeah.
You know, seek out alternative forms of media versus being told what to think. Become your independent thinker. Be that reasonable activist instead of the unreasonable activists that are driving our lives.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I think that's all the time we have for today. I want to thank Mike Solon, Seattle Police Department's Guild President, for coming out here today, taking the time from his busy schedule. It's not easy bringing you the news, but we endeavor to do it. We will take a short break and then come right back with the closing monologue.
And before we finish off this segment, Mike, where can people go to hear your podcast out more information about you?
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. Yeah, seattlepoliceofficers.org.com, whatever you want to put in your search engine. You can find Hold the Line with Mike Solon on YouTube or any podcast platform. You can visually and audibly listen to it. And you can go to the United Coalition of Public Safety, ucops.org, to see our national group and what we're doing nationally. And I would say that you can check us out on social media as well at SPOG, Seattle Police Officers Guild, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and YouTube, as I mentioned. But I would say that we're at a time that we have to get the information out there, gentlemen, and we have to get people involved, and this is the way to do it. We're driving the train here.
Very good. Thank you.
True patriot, Mike. Thank you for all of your public service and all of your outreach as well. And I don't think folks realize the amount of work, passion, and sweat that really goes into whether it's your podcast with Seattle, whether it's working your regular shift. It's all God's work, in my opinion.
Appreciate
so thank
it,
you, sir.
Amen.
With Columbia, Tennessee-based EnergizeHealth.com, you lose fat fast, simply, and naturally without restrictive exercise or cardboard, dry, tasteless food. Revolutionize your health with this proprietary 88-day science from John and Chelsea Jubilee. People report getting off medications and reversing ailments. Energy, mental clarity, and alertness go through the roof, look and feel many years younger and oftentimes unrecognizable. I know, I'm an alumnus and lost 70 pounds of fat with John and Chelsea and wouldn't have energy to do 3 shows a week without it. Hit the link in show notes for your free consultation and discount, money back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose but unhealthy fat. EnergizedHealth.com.
Welcome back to the final wrap. This is where we share my thoughts on the matter, but I do want to remind you and everyone else to subscribe to the Mill Creek View podcast, the Mill Creek View newspaper. Head on over to www.millcreekviewonline.com and catch us there, catch our shows, get some good information. Today's show is about reality. There were no embellishment of the facts you heard here today. You heard directly from the source, from the ranks. No media bias, no buffers, no skewed narrative. This is how it is for our neighbors to the south. Folks, look how fast it degrades when the cult of wokeness takes root in a community. Seattle should stand as a great example to the people, but unfortunately, many folks won't even look at it. Seattle's crime rates are higher than the national and state averages. You didn't ask for it, but you're allowing it. So my question is to the electorate. What is your threshold for abuse? Will you allow your family to continue to be victimized? What will it take to push back? I think back to those poor, unfortunate souls and businesses on Capitol Hill that were effectively held hostage in a war zone in 2020. That not only happened, but it was condoned by government actors on American soil. It's easy to blame bad elected leaders. They're easy targets and they're everywhere. I'm going to take it a step further and I'm calling you out. You bear most of the blame, voter. You voted for these people. You voted for political parties. You voted for skin color. You voted for religious beliefs when you should have been focusing on the content of character. People will always have the power, but they have to have the knowledge to exercise it. Martin Luther King famously stated, "History will have to record that the greatest tragedy of this period of social transition was not the strident clamor of bad people, but the appalling silence of good people." If you continue to elect these inept leaders, they'll continue to dismember civility. And trust me when I say, no matter what your affiliation, no matter what group, no matter what sect you run with, the mob will come for you at some point. They always do. When they run out of enemies, they cannibalize themselves. Friends, that's communism. You now have a great example, a great sample size of the left's failed social justice experiment in Seattle. And it's catastrophic. We simply can't have one nation with two different value systems. The men and women within the law enforcement ranks in Seattle simply want to do their job and protect you and protect your community. They've dedicated a lifetime to public service, and the progressives hate them for it. Every time I speak publicly, I talk about roles, and everyone in the process has a role to play, a vital role to play in America's future. And I don't care if you're the Boeing engineer, the Microsoft techie, or the soccer mom. So what is your role? What can you do to protect God's gift to humanity? Because I assure you, nothing in your community will ever work if your community isn't safe and the progressives rely on keeping you scared. I encourage you to be fearless in the coming days. I want to thank Seattle Police Guild President Mike Solon again for really taking the time and really opening up his heart for the community. Thanks to Steve, the producer. This is the part where I go to Tyson, but he's not here, so I'm going to cover Tyson's quote for the day. Sun Tzu wrote, "An evil enemy will burn down his own nation to rule over the ashes." Lastly, I want to thank you, the listening audience to the Mill Creek View podcast. As I stated earlier, it's no easy trick bringing you the truth in today's America, but I promise to always endeavor to do so. So until next time, I'm Vincent Cavalieri, and I wish you all God's peace. Take us home, Steve. I will say
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.